We actually, moving on to game news. You remember Jack Thompson, our good friend from a few weeks ago, who advocated killing video game designers?
Asshole.
Yeah. Well, I guess I
only
shouldn't say...
Only fantasizing about killing
yes,
game designers.
It was only fantasizing. I don't want to incorrectly report what he was doing. Well, there's a guy who is going around to all of the different police departments in the U.S., and he's actually sort of encouraging the cops to fight against violent media and video games.
Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman.
Yes, Dave Grossman, who... He is an ex-Army Ranger and West Point psychology professor. He is currently on the road 300 days a year since 2001, speaking mostly to law enforcement departments and academies about the violent media and video games are the largest single threat to modern civilization. Yes. So,
you know, I gotta say it again. It's worth repeating. If there was any correlation between video games and violence, there would be so much evidence of it at this point. But violent crimes in the United States per capita have actually decreased since the 90s. If anything, one could argue that violence in video games actually allows people to act out their aggressions in a nonviolent way. I'm not saying that, but there is no evidence at all to put not even the most remote correlation between the two. It's very annoying.
I agree, and in fact, I believe I've heard statistics that violence in the youth is currently down. However, I don't know, you know, I don't have those statistics offhand, so, you know, I can't really
say that. We can bet
that
if they're the other way around, these guys would be trumpeting them. The fact that they're insisting, but it's got to be true because I'm really loud.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are kids out there who go out and they maybe mimic some sort of behavior that they see in movies or on TV or in video games, and some of that behavior is violent, some of it's not. And
can't
so,
we just blame it on comic books? Like
yes.
Like
can't we go back
in
time? And, yeah. But, you know, I think that's too easy to say. It's all the fault of X. If we can just get rid of X, then everything would be fine and happy, right. And we'd all go around holding hands and singing songs. And
Thomas J. Veeney, the co-founder of the Police Policy Study Council, which is a law enforcement training and consulting company, said that this Dave Grossman guy is misguided to draw a definitive link between media violence and real violence. And he brought up an interesting point here later on in the article. He said Grossman makes it too simplistic and illogical. And the vast majority of violent felony crimes are being committed by inner-city youths who don't have an Xbox or a PlayStation or whatever, meaning they haven't been conditioned by violent video games. Which
they've been
makes
conditioned
sense.
By the violence around them.
Exactly.
So until we can, you know, get rid of some of that. And the violence around them was not necessarily caused by an Xbox or any of the games that can be played on that. Apparently, Grossman does advocate ways to remedy violent media is, you know, to challenge the producers and distributors in court, which is what Jack Thompson also does.
I'd like to just pipe in quickly as a dissenting opinion. I think Grossman gets Grossman is no Jack Thompson. Grossman is he's not a sensationalist guy, I don't think. I think he's quoted out of context a lot. His central message, I don't think, is so much trying to establish causality as to just point out that a lot of gaming does desensitize people, specifically children, to violence. And that we should consider that violence, we should restrict that violence to minors the same way we restrict alcohol, drugs, pornography, and other things that we consider destructive. So I don't think Grossman really needs to be tarred with the same brush that we use for Jack Thompson. And I also don't think we necessarily have to establish a causality between violence and games to understand that we need to appreciate violence in games and its effect on minors in a different way than we are right now.
Well, I think you make an excellent point there, Tom. I do think that when you're making a video game or you're making a movie or a television show or writing a book or whatever, you need to think hard about who your audience is and what it is you're trying to put out there and what you're trying to advocate. I can't speak for video games much. I only have the one experience of working here at Stardock, and the game that, you know, we're making is not violent.
Well, we commit genocide on a, you know, galactic scale, well, xenocide. But I mean other than that. Right?
Yeah. As long as you can't beat up hookers, you're okay, though.
But you don't see blood, right? That makes all the difference. I can say that from my experience in the movie industry, on the fringes of the movie industry, there are plenty of people who do not think about what they're putting out there, and they only want to put out the most sensational, the most violent, the most gross, the most, you know, horrible things that they can. I do think if you think there is a problem with the system, you know, it is incumbent upon you to go out and try to change it. But I hope we do that from a perspective of logic and facts and not from a perspective of, you know, crazy, wild accusations.
Speaking of crazy and wild, I have a question.
Yes.
If you play a Grand Theft Auto-style game where you can kill cops, kill pedestrians, kill hookers, and there's lots of blood and all that kind of thing, and that's bad, right? Now, if you're playing something like Quake or Doom where you're killing, say, monsters or aliens or whatever, and there's just as much blood, that's okay because it's not a realistic scenario?
No, I think, I'll just say, what from my perspective, I think that people like Grossman would say that it's still violence, and therefore it's still desensitizing our children to violence.
Because you're killing something.
Because you're killing something.
Grossman, one of Grossman's points is that the physiological reaction you see is the same in these situations as it might be in combat or combat training. Whether you're shooting at an alien Strog in Quake 4 or taking a baseball bat to a pedestrian in Grand Theft Auto. And it's funny to see the ways that some publishers work around this. There was a fairly notorious driving game called Carmageddon from, I think, the 90s, where the whole point was to drive over pedestrians and they would, you know, red blood would splash out. And it was wonderfully over-the-top violent. No, the physiological reaction in Brad Wardell right now.
Yes.
Exhibit A. The way they got around this in Germany, the way they got around this being violent was they just turned the blood green and they explained, these aren't pedestrians, these are zombies.
I see.
Which, I don't think that makes much of a difference.
right.
But
nobody likes zombies. They're Vulcans.
Exactly, right.
They're not zombies, they're Vulcans.
Oh, Brad.
Sorry.
But to answer Derek's point, I think that it's not so much the little nuances of whether you're killing a human or an alien. To people, I think, like Grossman, don't really make that much of a difference.
And I can say from my experience in putting together our ESRB rating from Galactic Civilizations 2, when they ask about violence in the video game, they specify against humans, against animals, against made-up monsters, creatures, aliens. They don't break it down, you know, and give you any indication that they're going to rate you differently. Now, maybe they do, but they don't give you any indication that they're going to rate you any differently if your game is about killing zombies as opposed to killing humans.
Although it is worth noting that a lot of games these days, they make a point of having you kill robots instead of humans. I mean, George Lucas's goofy Star Wars movies, you know, are much more kid-friendly because Obi-Wan is cutting up robots with a lightsaber instead of actual aliens or things that bleed or have feelings. So, oddly enough, I think that is still, there's this idea that it's okay if it's to point a gun at something if it's not biological, which I think is a little silly.
Well, isn't Grossman taking on not just video games, but pretty much all media, including movies?
Yeah.
See, I was just thinking, you know, as far as the desensitizing and the sensationalism and all that kind of thing, causality, you know, when I watch something like Fight Club, I'm thinking, yeah, I want to go beat the hell out of everybody around me. Yeah, you know, and then I realize this little itty bitty hangnail right here on the corner of my finger hurts like hell, and I'm allergic to pain. So that's probably not a good idea. And it, you know, it's right back to reality. You know, I'm not going to go hit me as hard as you can just because I watched a movie. And I'm certainly
right.
Not
but the difference, Derek, is that we are very different as adults from children. Children are not that bright. Not that bright. I don't mean to say they're that. Children, they're much more susceptible to suggestion. They're very malleable. Children are impressionable. I guess that's sure. the word I'm
I don't
looking
know.
For.
I mean, I just, you know, I'm a father. I have two children, I think two, something like that. And, and yeah, I just don't see that they watch. I let my children watch things that most parents would not agree with. And they don't pick it up. They make the distinction. They definitely make the distinction, even at, you know, 5 years old. And I mean, I don't think my kids are particularly bright or anything. It's just, I think kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for.
Can I counter Brad's anecdote with one of my own real quick?
Yes, please.
There's a lot of, you know, you can look at studies and data, but anecdotes like this are valuable. That's great that Brad's kids are resistant to that. But you know what? And this is different from violence, but I think back to this a lot. I quit smoking maybe, I think, 2 years ago. And I started smoking because of a movie. And I remember the movie. The movie was Die Hard. In Die Hard, I thought it was so cool how Bruce Willis, while he was fighting terrorists, found a pack of cigarettes, and at crucial moments in the movie, he only had a few left, he would pull a cigarette out of a soft pack and light it up. And that was awesomely cool. And I smoked, and I bought soft packs all the time. And it was because in Die Hard, I thought that was awesome. Now, I was an adjusted kid. I didn't go out and beat anyone up. But, you know, this was high school for me, and I was impressionable to that kind of thing. Well, and now they don't show smoking in TV or in movies. They're very careful about that. And I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but I do know that I was stupid enough in high school, even though I'm a fairly bright kid, to smoke because I thought it was cool in a movie.
Well, I don't think it's an either-or thing, but keep in mind, you watched a movie called Die Hard, in which people were murdered and slaughtered en masse, right? Beat up, blood all over the place. And what you picked up out of that was not to go out and murder and kill people, but smoking. I think it's a matter
right.
of degrees, where you go, well, you know,
of
smoking,
course, but
you know right from wrong. Smoking, it may be frowned upon, but it's not considered like morally wrong or anything like that. We don't have
no, but it's destructive and it's horrible and it's a stupid thing to do and it's bad for your health. I mean, yes, you know right for wrong, but my point is, I was impressionable enough, even though I knew right from wrong, to do something really stupid because I thought it was cool. And yes, you're right. Maybe I'm pushing the point too much, but the point is simply that the kids are impressionable. And for every kid like Brad's, who of course resists these things, and I didn't go out and kill people, but I still did something stupid because I didn't know any better, because I was a dumb kid.
Well, I think there's been several instances that we can probably point to where kids do stupid things because they saw it in a movie or they saw it on TV or whatever. So, I definitely think that there's proof that kids will imitate the actions of those around them. I mean,
and sorry to interrupt, but not just imitate, but be desensitized to the impact of something.
Right.
Well, if I were designing a game that was based on this, I would say that those things in movies apply certain influence points on the player, on the child, and that the child starts out with, and every time that, but also as they're growing up, depending on with their parents and their environment, applies influence points the other way, like the stigma against violence and about hurting other people and about against killing. They are kind of constantly getting that reinforced that they shouldn't do that, and that I think that's what it really boils down to. Whereas on smoking or even swearing and that kind of thing, there aren't nearly as many points on the child to keep them from going off and doing that. My son came the other day and he said, "Yeah, that guy at school, he's a total bastard," and like. Because I say bastard all the time, you know, but he hadn't been, because he didn't have the points against, you know, not saying that word, he was influenced to say that, whereas he's had a lot more reinforcement against don't do violence. Just
right.
Whether it be don't push that kid down, don't put the, you know, kid, you know, don't put the cat in that fan, you know, the usual types of things.
Yes.
You always see public service announcements that are like, talk to your kids about smoking. You know, it's not cool. And talk to your kids about drugs. It's not too late. Even if you did it, talk to your kids about drugs. And you never see one for like, don't, you know, talk to your kids about saying the word shit. Don't let them curse. You don't see that. You don't ever see anybody talk about, you know, talk to your kids about not hitting the other kid on the playground. It's very rare that you see an anti-violence kind of thing, unless it's talking about hate crimes or, you know, gangs or something like that. They always do the big ones. There's never one of those just public service announcements that says, you know, violence is not the answer. Thanks. You know, that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Well, you hardly ever see, you know, talk to your kids about the violent video games they're playing either. But I don't think, I mean, they have ratings on video games, they have ratings on movies, they have ratings on TV even. So I think, you know, a lot of that is, it's up to the parents to kind of keep an eye on what's going on.
Every time we do a story like this, it always comes down to the last point being, if, you know, if there were better parents, you know, better parenting in general, there wouldn't be nearly as many problems.
Mm-hmm. Tom, do you have a game pick of the week for us?
I have a non-violent game.
I was going to just ask that.
Bloodsoaker 3. Oh, my God. You can actually see their organs explode one by one. They must have modeled every liver and kidney in that.
I have a game that not only would Lieutenant Dave Grossman approve of, but probably even Jack Thompson would approve of this thing.
Okay.
And it's not a kid game either. This is a game. It's very much an adult game. It might be an age-specific game. You might have to be over a certain age to really appreciate this. It's something that has sort of picked up internet buzz. It's been going for a little while. It's really a hard-to-find game. And I'm actually, I gave a few of them away as Christmas presents. And I would recommend it to all three of you. You need a PlayStation 2.
Civilization 4?
What?
Is it Civilization 4?
No, it is. Although, can we talk about Civilization 4?
No!
No!
Oh, okay. Rats.
Why is there a new patch?
No! Can I change my pick of the week?
No,
this is a game called Guitar Hero. And Guitar Hero is basically a rhythm game where you're watching the screen, and every time a little colored dot moves through a circle, you have to press a certain button. And that sounds really dull. But what Guitar Hero does is it gives you this guitar controller that you're wearing an actual guitar, a plastic guitar, and the buttons on the frets you press while strumming a little lever down where the strings are supposed to be, and you're sitting there in your living room in front of your TV playing a freaking guitar in front of the television while these classic rock songs are going on the screen.
Wow.
And what happens is the better you do, as long as you're hitting it right, then it's actually playing the guitar track, the sound of the song. If you mess up, the guitar cuts out. So dependent on hearing the guitar is your performance. So it creates this illusion that you're actually playing the guitar.
How interesting. And
while you're doing this, you get into a groove where you're like moving your finger over the frets and you're strumming this way and that. And there's even one of those wah-wah bars. I don't know what you call that thing. And you're wiggling that thing and you're moving around on your feet, and before you know it, you're a rock god.
On Monday, we went to the Michigan IGDA, and the guys there were talking about Guitar Hero 2, and they were raving about, in particular, I haven't played the game, but they were raving about the controller on how it really does make you feel like you're playing guitar. And there's a couple guys there who actually do play guitar who said that even though it's not, you know, obviously a real guitar, it still feels natural enough the way you play it that they just loved it.
And the beauty of it too, Brad, I don't know a B flat from a C minor. I don't know the first thing about music, and I wasn't raised playing an instrument, and I feel like I miss out. I watch people play piano and it's beautiful, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Wow, that must be awesome to do that. And this is the closest to a guy like me. It's too old for me to learn to play music. I can't be bothered. I can't sit down and practice. So this is a perfect way for a guy like me to actually feel what it get a sense of what it must feel like to be able to play music. It's this great new experience in an industry that rarely provides new experiences, that just polishes a half dozen or so of the same old experiences. Guitar Hero is an absolute revelation.
Well, that's great.
You know, my dad just popped into my head. He's like, back in my day, we had used a tennis racket.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sound like I guess the main question, though, is because that's the main point of becoming a Guitar Hero is has nothing to do with music. Were you able to pick up chicks?
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing is I look pretty silly. I mean, I'm a rock god when I'm doing it, but if anyone were to see me, I must look ridiculous. I'm banging my head back and forth, and I'm wiggling my hips, and boy, I must just look really stupid. So no, I wouldn't let a chick see me doing this.
So that's when you do it in the privacy of your own home, where no
exactly.
one can see
you. Behind locked doors.
Right. Right.
So if we were to, you know, let's just say video you doing this, and and then we sold the video, would that be wrong?
I have images of that poor Star Wars kid, that kid from Quebec who was jumping around in his garage with a golf ball retriever thing. You guys know the video, like it was a lightsaber.
Yeah,
that's what I look like.
Someone actually took that and turned it into a lightsaber too.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And he achieved internet fame. And I'm sure I look exactly pretty much like that guy.
You could gain more fame, Tom, by doing that.
Yeah,
that's the kind of fame I don't want.
Take a quarter to three party at the next E3. Tom Chick, oh my God! Look at this Guitar Hero Tom.
Well,
so it's only for the PlayStation 2, though, right?
It's only for the PlayStation 2. It is, I think it's $70, which isn't bad. I mean, considering you get this big old honking controller. Yeah, and it's also hard to find. It's one of those things that they... Red Octane is the publisher. The creator's a group in Boston that did rhythm games called Amplitude and Frequency. And it's a tough one to find, but if you can find it, I absolutely recommend it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tom. We appreciate it. So we have this new new thing now. We've got questions from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Questions from the listeners. Am I going to have to come up with a new musical thing to go in?
Yes.
Here?
Just a little
we get letters.
Yes.
We get lots and lots of letters.
Viewer mail. All right. Take it away.
Hello. My name is Matthew, and I'm calling from the UK. My question is directed towards Brad and Tom. BitTech.net recently showcased Valve's developments on bringing cinematic effects such as motion blur, depth of field, and color correction to the Source engine. What were your reactions to these features, and how greatly do you feel they could enhance the single-player game? Thank you.
Matthew, good question. Thanks for bringing those up. For what it's worth, the things that Valve is talking about are things that probably other companies like id is already working on. So they're just sort of stating the obvious. These are things that can make games look better. We want them, which I think my reaction is sort of a no duh, doesn't everyone. So let's hope they get them, though, because even for people who may not know exactly what these specific technical tricks are, I think that a major innovation that people like Valve and id bring to the table are subtle tricks that when you're playing a game you may not understand, but sort of go straight to your brain to communicate this idea that you're in a different reality. Technologies like that, they help, even if you don't understand them. Valve, let's work on these things, and I'm sure everyone else is as well, and we look forward to seeing how they turn out when we start building them into games and hardware cards start supporting them.
What they're asking for, really, is they want the hardware vendors, ATI and NVIDIA specifically, to put more silicon in there to hardware accelerate motion blur and depth of field. Whenever you look at a game, the two things that tend to make it look fake, and I know we're going through this even through our cutscenes, is that it seems too clear. And the way you fix that is to make it so that things that are moving look like they're being blurred because of the number of frames in the camera, and making things that look far away look further away by blurring them out. And that's very expensive from a hardware point of view. Like Tom said, I think it's kind of like, well, duh. I'm sure ATI and NVIDIA have on their product roadmap plans to add this into the hardware once it becomes feasible to do it. And no one's going to pay $2,000 for a card that right now, I shouldn't say nobody. I forget who we're talking to. Not many people are willing to pay $2,000 for a video card in order to do on-the-fly motion blur and on-the-fly depth of field stuff. I mean, you can do it using a number of tricks. id and Valve have no doubt have ways to kind of simulate it. But if Valve really wants to get this sort of thing done, probably the best way to do it is not through press releases that they're saying, hey, look, we're thinking about these important things, but to actually go to Microsoft, who makes DirectX, and try to get that supported either in software or to go to ATI and NVIDIA and try to get them to do it through hardware and then go back to Microsoft and encourage them to support the next iteration of DirectX.
You know, just as a layman, I do think it is funny that as technology is marching on and as games get more sophisticated, a lot of what we're chasing after, a lot of what developers are chasing after is imperfection. You know, all the way back to lens flare, there's this idea that to make things more realistic, you have to duplicate the sort of the mistakes that the eye and that film and that cameras make.
Absolutely. Motion blur is a good example of that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's basically a camera error.
Yeah, reality is flawed, so we need to present that to be more realistic. That's
interesting. Well, thank you both very much for answering that Matthew's very well thought out and well put together question.
Yeah, and I might add that Matthew was the very first one to call in with a question, so we're happy to get that in there for him.
Yeah.
So what's the prize we're sending him? Matthew, tell him what he's won, Kristen.
He's won
a new car!
Shush! No!
Oh, awesome!
Not a new car.
Can we do an Oprah thing where everybody in the audience gets a new car?
Yes.
All of you are getting cars!
Oh,
yeah!
Just contact Oprah. She will get you your car.
Yeah, exactly. He gets to listen to more Power User TV. Unfortunately, we don't have prizes to give out. But thank you very much, Matthew, for being our very first caller. We do actually have another call.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Yes, we do. This one is from Matt in Pennsylvania, and here's the call.
I'm Matt Boston. I'm from West Pittston, Pennsylvania. I'm calling in to ask Brad Wardell if he has a bowl of fruit next to his computer or if he brings his fruit with his lunch. Thank you very much.
Well, in that particular incident one of the recent weeks where I gave in and ate the forbidden fruit, so to speak, our accountants had actually sent us for Christmas a big fruit basket, and they had put it on my desk. And so I'm sitting here looking at this fruit basket over and over, and it had all kinds of beautiful looking apples and all that. So that's all gone now. Those have all been distributed out to people. And I normally do bring an orange for lunch, but I've eaten it by the time we record.
There you go.
Usually.
Usually.
My finger smells like oranges.
Yeah. Well, that's from lunch, though, because I don't wash my hands. Ever.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, God.
You heard it here first. The accountants gave Brad a nice fruit bowl.
All righty. Yes. I think we've had just about enough of that. So thank you very much for joining me, Derek, Tom, and Brad. And thank you all for listening. This podcast is brought to you by neowin.net, wincustomize.com, and quartertothree.com. Support us by subscribing to us on Yahoo Podcasts, iTunes, Podnova, or Odeo.com, and look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.